on the Colorado State Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the Colorado State Insider with the voice of the Rams, Brian Roth.
All right, we're off and running once again right here on the Colorado State Insider podcast. And oh, what a difference a week makes, doesn't it? Colorado State coming off their first win of the season. They go to Toledo as a two-touchdown underdog, and Steve Addazio's team puts forth one of the best defensive performances I have seen in the past two decades in my time here at Colorado State, and they beat Toledo 22-6. All right, welcome everybody. Brian Roth, voice of the Rams, with you. So much more fun to do these podcasts and to be a Ram fan, obviously, when you win football games, and that's what the Rams did last week. We'll talk about that Toledo game and kind of go through some of the numbers and talk about that defensive performance that was absolutely sublime. I mean, the Rams were terrific defensively. Offensively, they did enough to get the job done. And then, of course, the special teams play, the punt return by Thomas Panunzio really broke that game open and propelled the Rams into the lead, a lead they would not relinquish. So we'll talk about that. We'll also have several guests on the program as well. David Bailey joined us on the Coach's Show Monday night, and we'll re-listen to that interview. My first chance to have any conversation with David Bailey, and man, I came away impressed. The transfer from Boston College, over 130 rushing yards in the contest against Toledo. He's a big dude, and he was a man on Saturday. So I think you'll really enjoy that conversation with David Bailey. Then we're going to turn our attention to Iowa. Of course, the Hawkeyes coming up, number 5 team in the entire nation. Rams going to Iowa City on Saturday to take on the Hawkeyes, 1:30 p.m. kickoff, Mountain Time, from Kinnick Stadium in Iowa City. And as we talk about those Hawkeyes, we'll get a full breakdown of what game day is going to be like for Ram fans going out to Kinnick Stadium, and what that Friday night might even look like, which may be more important to some Ram fans out there, what that Friday night in Iowa City might look like. Gary Dolphin, the play-by-play voice of the Iowa Hawkeyes, will join us. Gary is a Iowa native. He's been doing the Iowa Hawkeye games since, I think he said, 1996. And so he'll provide insight on Iowa City, Iowa, that Iowa wave to the Children's Hospital, and then we'll get into the opponent and what's going to be happening on the gridiron on Saturday, a full preview of the Iowa Hawkeyes, so stay tuned for that. And then finally, we're going to wrap up the program and talk a little men's golf, and Christian Newton, men's golf coach, will join us at CSU yesterday. What a day at Fort Collins Country Club. It was round number 3 of the Ram Masters, and CSU wins it for the 7th consecutive time. They had to come from behind on Tuesday to get that win, but they did it. Davis Bryant was leading the way for Colorado State along with Christoph Beeler. All right, so with that, let's take a look back to last week at Toledo, and I'm not sure how many Ram fans saw that coming. I thought the Rams would play well. I thought Toledo was really good, but I don't know if any of us saw that coming. Colorado State, a 14.5-point underdog going into the Glass Bowl last week, and they come away with a 16-point win. But it was the defense and it was special teams that came through with flying colors on Saturday in Toledo. And you know, the defense, I thought, really set the tone for the Rams in that football game. Toledo got the football first, and I think Kevin McGlue, our color analyst, made mention of this on the broadcast, but I should have that number in front of me, but I don't. Said the first time in 11 games, was it? Maybe it was the first time in 7 games that Colorado State had gone on defense first. That the Rams had not had the football to open up a contest. And I'll tell you what, it worked out very well. Toledo won the coin toss. They decided to receive. Obviously, this is a Toledo team now coming off a near victory at Notre Dame, a game in which they felt like they outplayed the Fighting Irish in South Bend, a game in which they felt like they should have won. They were up 29-24 with 1:35 to go in that game. They would end up giving up a late touchdown drive in the contest and fall 32-29. So it was a Toledo team that came in with a pretty stout defense, an offense that had put up yards and points against Notre Dame the previous week. It was a Toledo team that I think many people feel has a really good chance to win the Mid-American Conference. And Colorado State goes in there, and they just put it to the Rockets on Saturday afternoon. And that opening defensive stand for Colorado State, they force a 3-and-out. I think it was the second play of the game. Devin Phillips coming right up the middle. The big defensive lineman registers the first of what would be a 6-sack day for that Ram defense, and it kind of set the tone for just how dominant that Colorado State Ram defense was going to be. Rams held the Rockets to just 291 total yards in the contest, but this is the thing I think that jumps out to me more than anything. They held Toledo to just 21 yards rushing. Now, remember, these two teams met up in Fort Collins at Canvas Stadium 2 years prior. In the 2019 season, Rams would fall in that contest 41-35. And if we remember, Toledo ran all over CSU. Rockets ran for 436 yards in that game, most of them coming in the second half. And their running back, Bryant Kobach, who was in the backfield once again this past Saturday, Kobach ran for 228 and 3 touchdowns in the meeting in 2019. Kobach was bottled up on Saturday, and to me, that's probably the most impressive thing we witnessed. It's a Ram defense that was great against the run last year, opening up against South Dakota State. They were not very good against the run, got much better against Vanderbilt, and then flat-out dominant on Saturday in the win against Toledo. So you hold Toledo to just 21 rushing yards in the game. Rams got home to the quarterback 6 times in the game. They had 10 tackles for a loss. They would hold Toledo to 4 of 18 on third downs in the game. And on fourth downs, because Toledo was rolling the dice in this contest, they held them to 1 of 4 on fourth downs. And you look at some of the stars in the contest. Toby McBride was terrific. How about Mo Camara? I mean, Camara coming off the edge as a defensive end, he was outstanding. Really, the entire front seven was really, really good. You had DaQuan Jackson that racked up double-digit tackles once again. But where we were concerned was on the back half, because CSU was without starting safety Tywan Francis, who had come into the Toledo game, even though he didn't play, came in as the Rams' leading tackler through the first two games. And they were without Logan Stewart because he was out the first half due to a targeting call in the fourth quarter of the Vanderbilt game the week previous. Well, CSU, while they did give up some passing yards in the contest, secondary played admirably. Henry Blackburn, the true sophomore, was really good. And then how about Jack Howell? Jack Howell, the true freshman, a kid that prepped at Valor Christian, moved down to Chandler, Arizona for his senior year. Of course, the son of John Howell, the former safety, former walk-on for Colorado State that ended up going on to the NFL. John, one of the stalwart Rams of all time. His son, Jack, makes his first career start on Saturday at Toledo, and he was terrific. In fact, comes away as the Mountain West Conference Freshman of the Week. And Jack Howell just might have earned himself a spot in that starting lineup moving forward as a true freshman. So there's some bright things ahead for that Colorado State defense, because they do have some young guys that really baptism by fire this year in that secondary. Robert Floyd, the walk-on defensive back, true freshman, also getting a lot of time as that nickel back for Colorado State. He played a lot in the contest. So some of these young guys are growing up right in front of our eyes. But it was a great team effort on defense for Colorado State. Now, how about the special teams? Well, of course, the play that really broke the game open, and I want to say broke it open in terms of all of a sudden the Rams were going to win after that point, but it's really the play that turned the tide in the contest. In the third quarter, 6-6 football game, Rams back to receive the punt, and Thomas Panunzio, who had been thrown into punt duties in that game because of some punt receiving struggles from a true freshman in Garrick Robinson, but he takes one to the house. 70 yards for Thomas Panunzio, and we said it on the broadcast, Kevin McGlew and I, to say it just had the feeling that there was going to be a big special teams play or maybe a defensive touchdown that was going to turn the tide of that football game. And the question was, which team was going to make it? Well, it ended up being special teams. It ended up being a punt return, and it ended up being the Colorado State Rams making the play. Panunzio goes 70 yards. All of a sudden, it's 13-6. That Rams sideline was electric. You saw some of the heads kind of hang a little bit for Toledo, and Colorado State was flat-out dominant the rest of the contest. That was only one part, though, of special teams for CSU. The other part was Caden Camper, the place kicker from Pueblo. Camper, who had struggled the previous week against Vanderbilt, had come into the contest just 1 of 4 on the season. Well, he goes 5 for 5 in the contest, hit from 31, 42, 29, 47, and then from 23 yards to cap off the scoring for CSU. And Camper was the Mountain West Conference Special Teams Player of the Week. I mean, what a bounce back game from Camper. I mean, you know his confidence had to be waning just a little bit coming out of that Vanderbilt game and probably had some questions flying around in his head. And he comes back and goes 5 for 5, a gutty performance by the kicker, Caden Camper. All right, now offensively for CSU. Yeah, the Rams weren't great in the contest offensively, but that's a pretty good Toledo defense now. That's a Toledo defense that played really well against Notre Dame the previous week. And the Rams weren't great on offense, but they were good enough. 319 total yards. They ran for 209. And Steve Adazio has the saying, and he always says it, when you go on the road, in that suitcase of yours, you better pack your defense, which Colorado State certainly did, and you better pack your run game. And the Rams ran for 209 yards, and it was David Bailey, the transfer from Boston College, who was absolutely terrific. Bailey carried the ball 30 times for 132 yards, and he was wearing down that Toledo defense as the game went along. Bailey was our guest on Monday night, Steve Adazio Coach's Show. We were out at Collindale at CBM Potts, and it was my first chance to really sit down and go one-on-one with David Bailey, and I found it to be an outstanding young man. So let's go ahead and hit the rewind button to Monday and listen to the senior running back for Colorado State, the transfer from BC, David Bailey. David, great to see you. And first, let's just go right to the game on Saturday. 30 carries. And we've heard Coach Adazio talk to us about, hey, if we can get into the third quarter, into the fourth quarter, we got a guy like David Bailey who could wear teams down. Did you feel like you wore Toledo down?
Yes, sir. I say every time I'm on the field, I feel like I can wear a defense down. I say, and also with the guys, it was a great effort from up front, also on the defense, and overall performance, it was great. So I said, we just keep pounding the guys and said, the offensive line, like I said, they did a terrific job from week to week. You see the process from week one to week two to week three. So if the guys keep improving, we can keep doing that to the team.
So you carry the football 30 times. What does it feel like walking off the field after carrying it 30 times? Or maybe is it the better question is, what does it feel like Sunday morning after carrying it 30 times?
I say during the game, you don't feel the pain at all. I say because adrenaline is rushing. So you just in the middle of the game, you just want to win the game, do whatever it takes to win the game. But when you wake up the next morning, you feel all the pain. You feel it through your neck, your back. Everybody part, I say, but you got to let that feeling after winning the game, definitely.
Yeah, I think one of the plays that kind of epitomized certainly the second half and really the whole game for your offense, it was late in the fourth quarter. I think you got the carry and you maybe got 1-2 yards down by the 15-yard line. Then that pile just kept moving, moving. I thought you guys were going to score and you got it down to like the 7 or the 6 yard line. I mean, that is exactly the type of offense that you guys want to be, that tough offensive line up front with a big back running behind him, isn't it?
Yeah, so definitely in this offense today, it all starts up front. I say you got to have a great offensive front, then a big back. I say you can also use any type of back, but say throughout the game you can see just with our offense, we run our plays. I say we can run up the middle and we keep pounding. But also on that play, it was a great effort from the offense. I said, you see the guys get behind me at that play, keep my legs moving, keep pushing me. I said, and we kept going. And I thought I was also going to score on that play, too.
Yeah, I did, too. I did, too. I was like, this is going to be a highlight we're going to see on SportsCenter. It was like a rugby scrum. It just kept moving, moving, moving. Didn't quite get to the end zone, but nonetheless, again, I think it kind of an undercurrent of what we saw in that second half with this Ram offense. I know guys were frustrated after the first two games and the Vanderbilt game a week and a half ago. What was that locker room like following the big win at Toledo?
I say it was amazing. I say, guys, one thing you can't do in a college game, you can't keep your head down after the week because it's a new week. I say you win a game, you lose a game, so it all comes and goes. So I know our guys, getting that win, it really boosts our guys, and you can see the smile on each guy's face from day to day. You can see it throughout the whole week of practice. I say the guys, I say they're pumped right now, definitely because we're playing Iowa now at number 5.
All right, David Bailey joining us, the running back out of Ridgely, Maryland. Again, he goes 240 pounds. You saw all of that muscle and weight on display last week. Again, 30 carries, 132 rushing yards against Toledo. All right, so tell us about your journey here to Colorado State. You got recruited to Boston College by Coach Dazio, by Coach White, spent 3 years there. How did you end up here at Colorado State? Because you said the first time you stepped foot in Fort Collins was in June.
I say these guys, it's a great group of coach staff right here. I knew the guys since high school, so they pretty close to my family. They know my family well. They know me as a person. And I know one thing about them, they care about their players off the field. I say that's one thing that really got me into their attention to go to BC. I say now I did my 2 years there. The guys was there. Then my third year, went to try a new coach staff, things like that. So love the whole new coach staff at BC, but I think it's the right time for me to go back to Coach Adazio. See, my first 2 years, you guys, they helped me become the player I am now.
Yeah, I imagine Coach said, look, David, you come here, you know what we do, and we're going to give you the football 30 times per game, right?
I said, whatever the team needs. I said, sure. Guys, if it's taking 15 carries, taking 5, 30, I said, whatever the team needs, I said, I just want to win the game.
All right, so tell us about Ridgely, Maryland, because I won't lie, I didn't know where Ridgely, Maryland was. I Googled it. It's about an hour and a half to the east of Washington, D.C. It looks like kind of a smaller community, not a lot of folks. What was it like, and what was your upbringing like?
I say, born and raised on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. It's pretty close to kind of people, if you've heard of Ocean City, Maryland. I say that's a big part down there. I say, but it's a lot of fields and things like that. It's a lot of peace and everything pretty much in the country. It's pretty much similar up here, but I say I always raised over there at Chesapeake Bay Bridge. My dad, he was originally born in Baltimore, but moved there when he was younger. And my mom, she was also born and raised over Eastern Shore. So that's my home. I love it, and I'm always going to keep going back there.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so it begs the question, what were your initial feelings and thoughts about the western part of the United States? It's not as humid. Obviously not as much of air to breathe. I'm sure you noticed that right away. But give me some of your thoughts about Fort Collins in Colorado.
Oh, so far, I say when I first got off there playing right in Denver, I said first took a foot on step a foot on into the plane and everything. I say I'm loving it so far. I say it's a beautiful sight. See the mountains and it's. I say like I always tell my family, I feel like I'm on vacation still. I say come out here, you get the. It's like nice and peaceful, and I say the community welcomed me well. Yeah. Also just with the team, TSU, beautiful campus, and it's also beautiful around Fort Collins. So. Can't complain about nothing at all. I'm loving it so far.
Now, Fort Collins and Colorado is a great place to live, as all of us in this room certainly know very well. A couple final thoughts before we let you go. Plans after Colorado State, and not for football, but I know, you know, here you are, you're a senior, but you have more football in your future. I know you would like to go on and play at the next level, wouldn't you?
I said most definitely. I said, yeah, I always thought about that as a kid and everything, but I said definitely my time in college, Sam. Just taking it week, year by year and week by week, I say, because, you know, 4 or 5 years, it don't last forever. So, I say, just want to enjoy the football while I can. I say, and while I'm in there right now, I'm just thinking about college football and thinking about the next level whenever I get a chance to go there.
What are you studying here at Colorado State?
Communication major, and my minor is sports management.
All right. Give us your thoughts on the Iowa game. You played in big environments, obviously, coming from the ACC. There's going to be 65,000+ fans at Kinnick Stadium coming up on Saturday. Do you relish those type of atmospheres?
I say you got to love them type of games. I say you see those are the type of games you want to play in front of. I say the packed crowds. I say that's what you live for. I say the players. Say you see the guys always hype. I say when you come in those type of environments, you always got to be on your game right there. I say Iowa. It's a great team. They rank number 5 in our country for a reason. So I said, all guys, pump. We're going to go down there and get to it like we did last week.
Yep, absolutely. David, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Continued luck.
Thank you so much.
All right, there's the running back from Ridgely, Maryland, and transfer from Boston College. And he was so good on Saturday afternoon at Toledo. And again, not always a lot of running room in that contest, but when David Bailey found a little bit of daylight, just a small crease, he would always turn a 2-3 yard gain into a 6-7 yard gain. And Colorado State didn't have any real big run plays in that game. Bailey did have about a 20-25 yard touchdown run that got nullified due to an illegal block. But outside of that, again, which wasn't an official run, Colorado State did not have many long runs. It was a consistent pounding of the football led by David Bailey for the Rams to rush for 207 yards as a team. And again, as we mentioned right there on the coach's show, 30 carries, buck 32 for David Bailey. An outstanding young man at whether it be football, in the next few years in the NFL, or whether it be something else, David Bailey's going to be doing just fine. All right, well, let's shift our attention now to Saturday afternoon. Rams are going to be right back on the road, and this will be probably the biggest test of the year. Number 5, Iowa, upcoming. It's an Iowa team that went 6-2 last year in a COVID-shortened season, but they opened up the season with 2 consecutive losses last year. All games were in the Big Ten, but they finished out the year winning 6 consecutive games, including a victory over Wisconsin, and they entered this season in the top 25. They had some big hopes here this year, but faced a tough early season schedule right out of the gates. Well, they passed with flying colors so far. A win at home, a blowout win, over then number 17 Indiana, and then they went on the road to Ames to take on Iowa State, playing for that Cy-Hawk trophy, getting a big rivalry game there. Iowa State at the time was ranked 9th in the nation. They got the 27-17 win at Iowa State to go to 2-0 and then beat up on Kent State out of the MAC last week 30-7. They're off to a 3-0 start. They have won 9 consecutive games dating back to last year, and they have a defense that has been really, really good here this season. They only give up 10 points per contest. That's 4th in the entire nation. Their run defense is stout, giving up just 81 rushing yards per game, 19th in the nation. They only give up 279 total yards per game. That's 22nd in the nation. I mean, this is a defense that's really good, but those numbers aside, what this defense has been able to do is turn people over. They have forced 8 turnovers already here this season, 2 fumble recoveries, and they have 6 interceptions, and they have turned those turnovers into 44 points offensively. And they also have 3 defensive touchdowns on the season. They had 2 pick sixes in the season opener against Indiana. They had a fumble return for a touchdown against Iowa State. So not only are they stout, but they're opportunistic, and they give their offense short fields. Now, as for the offense, not quite as good as the defense, and it's a run first type of football team, and really it's an offense that's a lot like Colorado State. They want to be 60-40 run to pass, maybe even 55-45, but they have a really good running back in Tyler Goodson. He wears number 15. Went for 153 yards and 3 touchdowns last week against Kent State. Spencer Petras, their quarterback, has a big arm. He's big. I mean, he's going to be making his 12th start of his career. The junior goes 6'5", 233. Not great on the outside with receivers, and we're going to hear that here from Gary Dolphin, the play-by-play voice of the Hawkeyes here in just a moment. But a really good tight end in Sam Laporta, and of course, you think about tight ends over the years that have come from the University of Iowa. Of course, Noah Fant of the Denver Broncos, George Kittle of the San Francisco 49ers, probably could be the best tight end not named Travis Kelce in the National Football League. Then you also think about offensive linemen as well that have also come out of Iowa. Their offensive line this year, they have a lot of newcomers up front, but they're anchored by their center, Tyler Linderbaum. He is an All-American candidate, and he is an NFL prospect. So that's a look at the offense. They also have one of the best punters, like Colorado State does, one of the best punters in the nation, and Torrey Taylor. As for the head coach, Kurt Ferentz, and really remarkable, he has been at the University of Iowa as the head coach now in his 23rd season. He was hired in December of 1998. Just unbelievable this day and age for a head coach to be somewhere for 23 years, but that's the deal with Kurt Ferentz. He is the dean of college football, coaches at the Division I level. Nobody has been at their job as a head coach longer than Kurt Ferentz has been, and won the Big Ten back in 2015. And this is a ball club now. It looks like Ohio State is vulnerable in that Big Ten. This is a ball club in Iowa that has an opportunity to possibly win another Big Ten championship. They do not play Iowa or Ohio State here this year, but they could meet them, obviously, in a Big Ten championship game. But the bottom line is this. The Hawkeyes are really, really good, and it's going to be a monumental task for Colorado State coming up on Saturday. Rams go into that game 3 touchdown underdogs. All right, for more information on those Hawkeyes that the Rams are going to see on the gridiron, and maybe even more importantly for those Ram fans going out to Iowa City here this weekend, what's going on Friday night in Iowa City? What's going to be the game day atmosphere on Saturday afternoon in Iowa City? How about that Iowa wave after the first quarter as everybody in the stadium waves to the Children's Hospital that overlooks Kinnick Stadium there in Iowa City? An awesome, awesome tradition that started back about 4 years ago in 2017. I can't wait. I mean, that's one of the things I'm looking forward to maybe most about coming up on Saturday at Kinnick Stadium. Gary Dolphin, the longtime play-by-play voice of the Iowa Hawkeyes. He has all the details and give you the lowdown on that and more. I really enjoyed our conversation. Here's Gary Dolphin, again, the voice of the Hawkeyes. All right, Gary, great to have you with us here on the Colorado State Insider Podcast. Appreciate the time here today, and we're going to talk some football, but I want to talk game day atmosphere, maybe weekend atmosphere there in Iowa City. I know there's a ton of Colorado State Ram fans that are coming out here this weekend to take in the game, and it's probably their first trip to Iowa City. So give Ram fans a little bit of an idea of where they can go to eat and drink and what Iowa City is all about on a game weekend.
Good to be on with you, Brian. First off, great to have Colorado State, the Rams, coming to Iowa City this weekend. It's a phenomenal community. It's a true college town. It's probably 30 to 50,000 when school is not out. When school is in, 30,000 students pump that attendance or census number up to about 80,000, because they have two great bedroom communities that have blown up in an expansive mode, business and retail, called Coralville and North Liberty. And they're right on Interstate 80. As you know, if you got an interstate highway running right through your backyard, you better be progressive, so to speak. And then 15 to 20 minutes up I-380 is Cedar Rapids, which is a couple hundred thousand people. So Eastern Iowa is not all cornfields or soybean fields, like folks around the country are used to saying about Iowa. It's beautiful rolling hills, timber. It's really, the word Iowa means beautiful land. So I'll just leave it at that. But the campus itself is gorgeous. It's split right in two by the Iowa River. So on the east side, which is the downtown metro area of Iowa City, you've got a lot of the great academic buildings. The old Capitol, the original Capitol, was in Iowa City. They call it the Gold Dome. Niall Kinnick used to give pep rallies on Friday afternoon off the balcony of the great old Capitol, where the president's office is now. And then on the west side of the river, down the hill and up the hill, you've got Kinnick Stadium and Carver Hawkeye Arena, maybe a block apart. You've got many of the old campus facilities right clustered within about a two or three block area. You go further west of Iowa City, maybe a mile or two, and it's what they call the West Campus, where they're building all the new stuff. They just opened a $4 million soccer facility here a few weeks ago. The University Golf Course, Finkbein Golf Course, which is a championship golf course, went through a $3 million renovation here in the last couple of years. So Iowa's been very progressive, despite the pandemic and the COVID put, we tapped the brakes on a few of those projects, but things are going back strong. Great eating, great dining, downtown Iowa City. It's a typical smaller Big Ten destination. It's kind of like West Lafayette or Bloomington or Champaign-Urbana. It's not Columbus, Ohio. It's not Chicago. It's not Detroit, where the Maize and Blue reside. But it's just the right size for me. I grew up in small town Iowa, so I love it. But couple of my favorite spots for the fans coming in, Joseph's, which is a great steakhouse, the best in Iowa City, and Nate Kading, the great kicker with Iowa and the San Diego Chargers for 10 years, has a place called St. Birch, which I really like. And then if you're just looking for a great pizza or a burger, stop in at the Wig and Pen. That's an old English pub name. And it's right down the hill from Carver Hawkeye Arena, where the Hawks play basketball. So you can't miss it. It's right on the corner. It's a great spot. Now, it'll be packed on Friday night. But Lute Olson was an original investor in that, with the guy that owns it now called Dick Query. He's a great guy. He'll be sitting at the table to greet you. So there's my Chamber of Commerce pitch.
I like it. I like it. Listen, Ram fans are really excited to get out to Iowa City. First ever meeting between the Rams and the Hawkeyes, so first chance for Ram fans to get out there into Big Ten territory in the state of Iowa. All right, the atmosphere at Kinnick Stadium, you said it's going to be close to a sellout, close to 68,000, 69,000 fans. Kinnick Stadium now includes the Iowa Wave, and something's really a new phenomenon out there that's kind of swept through college football. I think everybody's heard of the Iowa Wave. Tell us a little bit about how that came about, and for maybe Ram fans out there that might not know what it is, tell Ram fans what it is.
It's about a 200-bed children's hospital. The University of Iowa Hospitals is annually, typically, one of the top 10 teaching hospitals in the country. So you have all of these young doctors coming from all over the world, and not just the country, all over the world, from Costa Rica to India to China to Brazil, to learn the newest medical techniques, the technology. It's a great research institution. So it's been close to 10 years now. They built this 12-story, again, Kinnick Stadium, the main campus is landlocked, Brian. That's one of the issues they've had. So they dug a crater, I don't know how deep, poured the footings in, and they went up 12, 13, 14 stories for what they now call the University of Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital. The Stead family gave a phenomenal lead gift, but it's about a $200 million property, and it sits right across the street behind the east wing of Kinnick Stadium. And as they designed this thing, they thought, you know, we primarily deal with sick kids who come from all over the country, all ages. And whether they're an Iowa fan or an Iowa native, they're football fans, or at least we hope they will be by the time they leave. And hopefully they're not there that long. But this hospital is a miracle every day. It treats all kinds of children's diseases and afflictions, primarily cancer. And so in the design phase of this, they thought, well, wouldn't it be nice if we can eggshell the thing and take the front wing, or the top floor, make it all glass, and kind of curvature it out over Kinnick Stadium, where the kids on game day can look down and have a great seat to watch the Hawks play. And so that came to reality, that came to formation, and it cost a lot of extra money, but man, has it been worth it. And then I can't remember where exactly somebody had the idea. Well, yeah, that's great. Then the fans can turn around at the fans in the east stands, the west stands, you're looking at it, can turn around during the game and wave to the kids. So out of that came the plan. Without over commercializing it, came the idea of the Wave. And a young country star in Nashville wrote the song, The Wave. And on opening, when they dedicated the hospital, he came back, set up a stage in the end zone. It was a Saturday night game. I don't know if it was Michigan or Penn State. And of course, sold out. And it was as loud as I've ever heard at Kinnick Stadium. And at the end of that first quarter, I don't think there was a dry eye in the stadium. And so it's become great tradition. You know, what's really unique and cool is when we travel around the Big Ten, Michigan State comes to mind, because out the southeast end of their stadium, there are no tall buildings. It's like empty fields. It's a land grant, a research institution, a lot of property on the Lansing campus. Their play-by-play guy, George, told me that at the end of the first quarter, a lot of their fans will stand up and just wave to the open sky in honor of the kids, the sick kids.
Right.
And I think the big picture, what it points out is, what it illustrates is that, you know, we're just playing a football game. There are kids across the street battling for their lives, and young adults too. And it makes you put things in perspective. But boy, on any given Saturday, there's 180 to 190 kids. You can see them waving away. And we stand up, everybody in the press box, the teams, you'll see the Rams and the Hawkeyes, and the officials now have gotten into it, where they just stand there for about 30 seconds and just wave to the kids. It's very heartwarming.
Yeah, that's really cool. I've seen, obviously, the videos of it. And for the Ram fans out there that don't know about it, just Google Kinnick Stadium, Iowa Wave, and you'll be able to see all about it. It's really, really cool. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that. It's at the end of the first quarter, right?
End of the first quarter. Yep. So before you go to your commercial timeout, you can stand and wave.
Right.
And the dogs can bark too to
yeah.
the kids.
There they are. That's right. There they are, doing a podcast out of the home studio. It happens.
Well, they want to be on the air too, right? Come on.
Oh, they've been on the air a bunch. Trust me, Gary.
Sure they have. That's great. We got a couple kitties here at my house. So they're not as vocal, but they like football too.
All right. Well, let's talk some football. All right. That Iowa won their final six games last year. Return a lot of talent here this season. What were the expectations coming into the year? Is it setting up to be like a 2015 when Iowa last won the Big Ten championship?
Yeah, you know, Brian, I wouldn't go that far because C.J. Beathard was such a special quarterback that year. And a lot of things went right for the Hawks that year. They had a great running game, and they had a nasty defense. And they had a guy named George Kittle playing tight end, even though he was beat up by that point of the season. But they didn't win by large scores in 2015. And, you know, in that regard, it's a little bit similar to this team's start anyway at 3-0. Now, Indiana, you know, to beat two top 25 teams out of the gate, I would have been happy with a split. But now that nine game winning streak, you know, I was hoping it gets to 10 and then 11. But, the players are, you mentioned comparing the 15 team with this team. I think Spencer Petras can be C.J. Beathard someday. He certainly has a stronger arm than C.J. He just hasn't gotten all that energy under control yet. But when you think about it, this is his first full year having spring training, summer workouts, and a fall camp. Last year, all that got wiped out by COVID. And so Spencer, for a first-year player last year, he really struggled at times. But his numbers would bear out that he's a fast learner, and he's picked up the baton right where he left off. That 2015 team did not have a Tyler Goodson, first-team All-Big Ten running back candidate, All-American candidate. He's off to a great start, averaging 5.5 yards a tug, and that's pretty good against the defenses that Iowa plays week in, week out. The wide receivers are a work in progress. You know, they lost two guys, Amir Smith to the Vikings. Brandon Smith is on an NFL roster. And so they're coming along a little slower. Now, Iowa always has outstanding tight ends. We had them then, and the Hawks have them now, and Sam Laporta. He had seven catches, a career-high seven catches Saturday against Kent State. Defensively, this defense is probably a little better than the one in 2015. And the one in 2015 was really good. Because the young kids have come along quicker than we thought. They lost Davion Nixon, who was a Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year last year. They lost Cedric Lattimore and Chauncey Golston, who was an outstanding defensive end. And those young guys, although they're not a finished product, freshmen and sophomores have jumped in there and have really done a good job against the run. The Hawks have outstanding defensive ends. They've got two very good linebackers. And then really the key has been the back end, the secondary all returned intact, along with the cashback Dane Belton. So that defense is legit. And when you've got a punter like Torrey Taylor that can you back you up to your own goal line, that makes that defense that much better. So they right now, all three phases are playing really good football, considering it's the first month of the season. Not a finished product yet, but hopefully, you know, Ferentz's theme is baby steps in September, get a little bit better each week. Don't turn the ball over. And then by the time you hit the Big Ten schedule in October, hopefully you're hitting all cylinders. Now that's difficult in my view this year, because that entire offensive line is brand new with the exception of the All-American at center, Tyler Lindebaum. You won't see a better ball snapper than this kid who's a junior. He was a great wrestler in high school. Came to Iowa as a defensive lineman. And they thought, you know, we got a lot of good defensive linemen. I wonder if we flip this kid over, could he play in the offensive line? And he's still got that nasty attitude. So you'll see a great player in Tyler. They got a starting guard back last week, Kyler Schott, who played a couple series. He broke a bone in August helping his dad bale hay on the farm. Jumped off a bale of hay. That's all he did. He jumped, you know, stutter step, jumped off a bale of hay, and he's had some foot injuries, so he should know better, especially when you're 285. Don't be jumping off a bale of hay. But I kid, Kyler, the kid's a former walk-on. You know, he's got hair down to his butt, but he plays a lot like Robert Gallery. Robert Gallery had that hair down to his kneecaps, too.
Right.
I'm not saying he's Robert Gallery, but he's a heck of a football player. So they're getting a little healthier, and hopefully that shows up for the rest of the year.
All right, final thought before I let you go, Kerry. You mentioned Kirk Ferentz and 23 years as the head coach at Iowa. I mean, his first season was back in 1999, longest tenured head coach, Division I. What makes not only maybe him unique to hold that job for 23 years, because it just doesn't happen anymore, essentially. I mean, of course, you have Gary Patterson, you have Troy Calhoun of Air Force in our league, who isn't quite to that. But not only what makes him unique, but what makes Iowa maybe unique for this to have lasted so long, because obviously Hayden Fry was there for 20-plus years before Ferentz took over back in 99.
I think you just answered your own question there, Brian. Kirk has such a reverence and respect for Coach Fry, the Hall of Famer, who, you know, when Hayden Fry came here, Iowa football was brutal from a one-loss perspective. We've always had good players, but just never able to put it all together, other than Evashevsky in the 50s and Jerry Burns early on in the 60s. So they had like 19 straight non-winning seasons. They had a couple 500 seasons in there from the mid-60s to 79, or the early 60s to 1979, when Hayden Fry, you know, Bump Elliott, who was a Hall of Fame athletic director for some reason. How'd you like to be the guy that hired Lute Olson, Dan Gable, and Hayden Fry? That's a pretty good trifecta.
That works.
Actually, Bump, Bump was around when Lute Olson got the job in the 70s. I'm trying to remember. My mind isn't what it used to be. But there's three Hall of Famers right there. And then thought enough of Dr. Tom Davis to put him into the spot when George Raveling left. So Iowa's been blessed with great coaches. But Hayden Fry gave Kirk Ferentz his first job. Kirk was a grad assistant at Pittsburgh when they had Johnny Majors and Jackie Sherrill and all those great teams. But he wanted a full-time paying job. In 1981, this youngster named Ferentz became the offensive line coach. Might have been the youngest offensive line coach in college football. Hayden was so good at gleaning coaching talent, young, old. And he brought a lot of the old guys, great guys like Bill Snyder, Bill Brazier, all as coordinators from North Texas. So he mixed the best of the young with the best of the old. And Ferentz never forgot that he gave Hayden his first head coach, or his first coaching position. And then 8 years later, he went for his first head job at the University of Maine. And ultimately, after 6 or 7 years in the NFL, when Hayden retired in the late 90s, Kirk applied for the job. Of course, Bob Bowlsby, who was the athletic director then, knew all about Kirk Ferentz. And Bob took a chance because this guy had never been a head coach at a major Division I school. And it was rough the first couple of years. When Hayden got to that point where he was battling cancer and he was sick and not paying enough attention to, you know, the day-to-day rigors of college football coaching, he decided to retire, and Kirk came in, and it took him about two. Normally a rebuilding program in the Big Ten is 3 to 4 to 5 years if you're at a school like Iowa. He really got it done in two and a half, and he's just, you know, it's 19 out of the last 20 years they've been bowl eligible, and that includes a couple of BCS bowls. So, you know, I never complain about consistency, especially when it's like Iowa football. This guy has worked wonders. And you asked why Iowa? Well, they have five kids, he and Mary, and they were all born in Iowa City, including the three boys who played football at Iowa. So he, even though he grew up in Pittsburgh, he considers himself an Iowa native.
Yeah, it really is remarkable. 23 years, especially in this day and age. I mean, I don't know. I mean, how many years does he have left? How old is Kirk?
Well, Kirk just turned, let me think here, give me a minute, 1955, I think is his birth year, August 1st, so what would that be, 66? So you know, his contract runs through 2025, you know, and he signed that, or the extension, a few years ago, and I was the one who said, you know, he'll never see the end of that contract. Now I'm not so sure. Because when you ask, he doesn't golf. He always told me when I win a national championship, I'll learn how to play golf. So that tells me that, you know what? And he says, what else am I going to do? He said, you know, I don't want to sit in the porch and play checkers all day. He loves football. He respects the game. He loves the game. You know, he always told me the three most influential coaches in his lifetime were his first position coach, Joe Moore, who was offensive line guru, Hayden Fry, and Ted Marchabrota, who was the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. And, you know, he worked for Belichick, and he and Nick Saban had offices right across the hall from each other when they were both on Belichick's staff in Cleveland. So he's been around a lot of great mentors. But those three, Joe Moore, who they now name the gigantic offensive line of the year trophy after. Hayden Fry and Ted Marchibroda, those are three pretty good ones to start with.
Yeah, indeed. Well, that's great backstory there on Kurt Ferentz. Again, longest tenured Division I head coach, 23rd year. Gary, really appreciate meeting you through Zoom here, but really appreciate you taking a couple of minutes out and enlightening us a little bit on Iowa football. And I got to tell you, I speak for Ram Nation. We are really, really looking forward to getting out there to Iowa City this weekend.
Well, you're going to love it. I mean, the Hawk fans are very hospitable. I mean, they're, you know, 80% of them are farmers or have a farm background. They're hardworking, blue-collar type people, just like the folks in Colorado. Now the Hawks want to, Hawk fans want to win. Don't be upset if they cheer too loud and get raucous. But they're very respectful. We love having visitors come to Johnson County. So look forward to seeing you, Brian. Thanks.
All right, there he goes. That's the voice of the Hawkeyes, Gary Dolphin. He's been in the Hawkeye radio booth since 1996, 25 years. That's some longevity. And how about Iowa and their coaching situation and the fact that they have only had two head coaches in four decades? Two. I mean, think about that. You had Hayden Fry, who I think Gary said took the job in 1979. And then you had Kurt Ferentz, who took over the job in the 99 season, and he's been there for 23 years. I mean, two coaches in what is that, 43 years, 42 years? Simply amazing. Should be a fun one again coming up on Saturday, Kinnick Stadium, Iowa City, Iowa. We're going to be on the air with our broadcast across the Colorado State Sports Network at 11:30 a.m. Mountain Time. Kickoff coming up at 1:35 on Saturday afternoon. All right, we're going to wrap up the program here, and we're going to do it with some golf talk. And how about the Colorado State Ram golf team? They win the Ram Masters Golf Tournament for the seventh consecutive years. They closed it seventh consecutive year, I should say. They closed out the tournament yesterday on Tuesday out of Fort Collins Country Club. They came from behind. They were down to Pacific entering the final round. Colorado State was really good on Tuesday, and they come from behind and they get the win. Davis Bryant was terrific, as was Christoph Blyler. They each fired 67s on Tuesday. It's three under there at Fort Collins Country Club for the college guys. And boy, what a way to start off the collegiate golf season for Christian Newton's team and to win that Ram Masters now for the seventh consecutive season. That's pretty cool. All right, Christian Newton, the head golf coach at Colorado State. I was able to catch up with him earlier in the day and talked about the great victory yesterday. Christian, thanks for joining us. Hey, congratulations on the big tournament win, and let's start right there. Talk a little bit about the dichotomy between Monday and Tuesday. You guys trail Pacific going into the final round on Tuesday, and man, your guys came through with flying colors. I mean, you had to be very proud.
Yeah, it was definitely proud. Monday was such a grind, and it was just kind of a day to survive. It was so difficult. One of the more difficult days I've ever seen in my 20 years of coaching. And so they were worn out, and we just challenged them on Monday night. Hey, we think something really special can happen tomorrow if you stay in a good frame of mind. You know, we're fifth place, but we're six back. And they came out and they had a little better scoring conditions, and the place was a little more like we know it and see it. Monday was just like a different golf course for us. We never see it like that. So it was just really awesome to see them come out and compete. The back nine they put together was the clincher for us. So I was just really proud of how the whole team played.
Yeah, Davis Bryant fires 67 on Tuesday. Christoph Blyer shoots 67 on Tuesday. Connor Jones is 68 on Tuesday. And can confidence get shaken after a day like you had on Monday? And I'm sure it can. I mean, I know a lot of guys walked off that course pretty defeated after 36 holes on Monday. But confidence can get shaken, but it didn't seem like that happened to your guys.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what a day like that can do, is it can really make you think you're a lot worse than you are. And that's what we try to talk about. Like, look, today was just really hard. Let's don't take any of it too seriously. It was really hard. Everybody struggled. The average score was in the 80s. So tomorrow's going to be a little more normal. And let's just see what we can do. you know, come out and put the first one in the fairway. Let's start with some confidence. And that's just what they did. They did just an awesome job. They hung in there the whole time. I mean, I didn't see anybody getting discouraged or hanging their head or quitting or giving up. And that was some pretty, you know, there was two guys in there that had just played their first college golf tournament. And for them to come out and have the resolve that they had mentally, I was really proud of that.
You expect a senior like Davis Bryant to kind of be headlining that and leading the charge on a bounce back round like he had with the 67 on Tuesday. And tell us a little bit about the tree incident. I saw some things on Twitter about it. I saw a video on it.
Yeah.
But on number 17, hits it into a tree. People don't see it come down. And take the story from there.
Yeah, so I mean, that's coming down the stretch there. And it's a par three. He pulls his tee shot and he hits it. And I saw the ball land high up in kind of like one of these spruce trees. And those balls, sometimes those trees can grab balls. Didn't see it come out. So we immediately, there's 10 people standing there. We immediately start looking up in the tree because we know if we can identify that it's his ball, then he can take an unplayable right there. We see a ball up there. We're like, yeah, that's it. We knock it out. It's not his. So one of his teammates who's not playing in the tournament climbs up the tree and just starts shaking. He runs 15 feet up the tree and starts shaking the tree and the ball pops out. And sure enough, it's his. So it really probably saved Davis a shot. So he's able to take the unplayable drop right there. He doesn't get it up and down, but he makes five and he could, you know. So anyway, kind of a wild thing to happen. It does happen. And I've actually seen it happen at that golf course before to someone. So
yeah,
pretty wild.
It takes a five there, but bounces back, birdies the 18th.
Birdies the last.
To close strong and a lot of fun there. Let's talk about this year's team. And obviously you get off to the great start with winning the Ram Masters. And that's always a good way to open up the season. It seems strange that there's no AJ Ott here this year. Of course, graduated. In fact, let's start there. How's AJ doing? Obviously, he turned pro here this past summer.
Yeah, so AJ is a professional. He's a professional. He's in town, so we still get to see him. He comes out and plays and practice some. He missed his Korn Ferry Tour qualifying. So he's going to play some state opens. And then I think his next thing is he's going to try to qualify for PGA Tour Latin America. You got to get on a tour. So whether it's Latin America or whether it's Canadian, Korn Ferry, you've got to get on one of those tours. That's just what you have to do to be able to have enough guaranteed times to play and starts.
Of course, we all know about Davis Bryant, the senior. You also have Oscar Teufel, also a senior, a guy that's been in your program. But you have some younger guys, some newer guys that are in the program as well. We mentioned Blyer, kid from Austria. Connor Jones comes over from DU. He has some college experience. Tell us a little bit more about this roster this season.
Yeah, this is a really different team. We are led by Davis, who's and Oscar, who are in their fourth years. And then they're all young from there. And so it's a really, really talented bunch. I mean, you have Blyer, who's a freshman. Connor Jones is a transfer from Denver. He's going to have 3 years. Obviously, Jay Pabin, he was a freshman from Texas. So that was his first tournament he's played in. And then also guys that are also on the roster, you've got, Gavin Hagstrom and Gunnar Broyne, who both have 3 and 4 years respectively. So a lot of time and out there for these guys to get better. We've normally in the last couple of years, we've had kind of a senior laden roster, and now these are younger guys. So it's fun to see what the future could be like.
One final thought. Tell us about the schedule. I know you have the Mark Simpson Invitational coming up next week from Colorado National Golf Club in Erie. You go down to Colorado Golf Club in Parker in a couple of weeks, and then you close out the November schedule out at Pebble Beach. And just telling you right now, if you need the radio guy to come out and play a practice round with you, just give me a phone call, Christian. I'm there.
Yeah, the schedule's awesome. Like I said, we get to go play at BU's event at Colorado Golf Club. We're going to Georgia Tech's event for the first time. We'll see awesome field there with SEC and ACC teams. And then we go to Poppy Hills out in Pebble Beach. So what a nice schedule it is for the rest of the fall. It's kind of spread out nicely. It's not too many back to back. And so we'll do some qualifying here around town and get ready to go. But we have what an awesome schedule. We get to play against the best teams on the best courses, and that's what you're looking for.
Yep, absolutely. Christian, thanks so much for jumping on with us here today. And again, congratulations on a great day in the final 18 there at the Ram Masters.
Awesome. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
All right, there he goes, Christian Newton, men's golf coach at Colorado State University. And, man, that was a great day for Colorado State as they edge Pacific by 7 strokes. Davis Bryant comes in second in the tournament, shooting a 10 over 220. And again, we mentioned that 67 yesterday. Jack Castiglia of UNC was the medalist individually with a 6 over par 216. All right, that's going to do it here this week on the Colorado State Insider Podcast. We always appreciate you tuning in, as always, please spread the word and subscribe to the podcast. Certainly appreciate you doing that as well. Big thank you to David Bailey. Great conversation with him on Monday night. Thank you to Gary Dolphin, the play-by-play voice of the Iowa Hawkeyes. That'll be a fun one coming up on Saturday afternoon. And then, of course, our final guest on the podcast, Christian Newton. For everybody, Brian Roth saying so long. We'll talk to you next week right here. Colorado State Insider Podcast.
This has been the Colorado State Insider with Brian Roth. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Colorado State Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.